This podcast is a part of the Neuhoff Media Podcast Network.
We're with Charmaine Robertson-Stoner from Crossing Healthcare, where she is the Chief Behavioral Health Officer. You've been doing this for a little while now. How many years?
13 years.
Yes. It is, I'm assuming, when we talk about the world today, when we talk about mental health in general, I operate under the assumption that there are a lot of people who are not reaching out for help that need help. I also am under the assumption that if all those people came forward tomorrow, we'd be in a world of hurt because there's not nearly enough service delivery. Is that true?
Very true. Absolutely. I mean, the need overwhelms kind of the system, so to speak.
So we have this catch-22 of trying to get people to see and deal with, but the more people see and deal with, the more paralyzed the system becomes.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, there's certainly an overwhelming need for mental health resources across the spectrum, no matter essentially who we are. It's kind of like our emotional wellness, same with our physical wellness. We kind of don't think twice about seeing a medical provider, some people. And yet we're breaking down the stigma of mental health resource or mental health support. Having said that, that's really true that if everyone came forward and said, okay, great, I'd like to see a counselor or a therapist, there likely wouldn't be enough.
And but also COVID accelerated other things like technology. We learned to do things a different way than the way we've always done it. And so maybe there are options. I'm assuming in this area, it might be the one piece of medical advice that a person might feel more comfortable talking to a stranger through a tablet than somebody they know in their community.
Well, that is, I think that is truly a fact. I've definitely had clients from you know, various platforms. There's various electronic or virtual platforms. And sometimes folks, they just want to process. It's kind of like a therapist in your pocket so that I can control the narrative. Maybe I'm not ready to be 100% vulnerable, but I can tell you that today I was struggling and I can text that. And there's something that's, you know, less intimidating about that.
Or and there's also some, platform. I'm assuming there's sometimes that's just a reassuring visit to go, it's okay.
Right.
What you're feeling is normal. Everyone feels that. It can be a relief. It may not be something that needs to be treated or go through counseling for a long period of time. But I think that border and that barrier and that threshold is different for different people. I really do.
Yeah.
But if COVID has taught us anything is that we've got to learn how to do things in a different way. We can't depend on the old. It's also impacted the mental health of hundreds of millions of people, whether that's long-term, short-term, socialization skills, you know, getting along skills, you know, after being isolated away from each other, you know, what parents were doing in front of their kids, you know, modeling, which is what we're going to be talking about a little today. Just a quick bit of advice for parents, though. I think right now it's never been harder. On one hand, we knew that when we grew up, somebody that experimented with, you know, drugs probably was not going to die. Today, we're in fear that one experimentation could lead to an overdose and a death just because of the difference of what's out there today. So we have this extra anxiety about this. We want to naturally protect our kids because that's just what we feel called to do. And then we've got teenagers that sometimes are just teenagers and a 100-year pandemic on top of all of that. I assume there's a whole lot of people that are questioning whether they're good parents, whether they're good kids, whether they're good family units. What would be the advice? What should we be looking for that maybe there's a red flag that we're ignoring?
Absolutely. Well, first I would say, we are more people than not are in the boat of questioning, right? Am I enough, right? And not just with parenting, but specifically with parenting. Is this enough? Should I be, you know, do I need to be more protective, less protective? What if they shut down and tell me less? What if they tell me more? What do I do with that? You know, so there's just it's kind of it's a cycle of anxiety of parenting. What do I do with this information? Well, truly, parents are the first teachers of their children. They learn about the world and really the introduction of who am I at the outset from their parents. And so that's certainly pressure for parents. And at the same time, there's something I think a little bit freeing in that because you're sort of setting the foundation for this little human.
And you are, but yet in the back of your mind, you want them to be the authentic them.
Yeah.
You don't want to push them down, you know, roads mm-hmm. that maybe aren't them,
right.
but you want them to have goals and you want them to be competitive, but mm-hmm. you don't want them to be too competitive. And by the way, no one gave you an instruction book. I remember the line from Parenthood about having to get a license to go fish, you know, but anyone can have a kid. I just think people can drive themselves kind of all
it's
over
true.
Trying to see all of those nuances.
That's
so
true.
What's the most important thing? What does modeling mean?
Yeah, so modeling, there's a theory, it's called social learning theory, and basically that theory says that we learn from other people. We learn how to be from others. And that's true for many of us, even throughout adulthood. We learn cultural norms and social norms, but that's especially true when we're in our formative years, when our brain is forming during the first, really, truly around 25 years of our life at the outset. But we look at up until age 18. And so it means that we are looking at those around us. And we're talking about parents, but truly we're also talking about teachers and friend groups and grandparents and really, you know, the core group of people who shapes this young person's life. We're modeling is essentially saying we are learning from those around us as to how to be. How do I react? How do I respond? If you became pretty upset about something and I didn't, maybe I need to be more upset about that. It's how we make sense of the world. At a very early age, it's how we identify with safety, what's safe and what's not. Okay, we're not walking out into the street on a green light. Why? Because something could happen. I could be hit. Okay, so it's a protective factor, and at the same time, it's how we make sense of the world. So those around the youth is really kind of modeling what that behavior looks like.
Okay, so your child is recording mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah,
and then piling up those bricks of foundation based on what they're recording. Mm-hmm. So they don't know whether they're recording good behavior or bad behavior. They're just recording the...
That's right. Okay. Absolutely. And so then that's when parents are either, you know, it goes back to those extremes. Some are just overly intentional about everything has to be perfect. And we all know by now, perfection doesn't truly exist. And then there's the other extreme, right? And so, you know, it's important to acknowledge that we have this influence on our children. And at the same time, I think there's value in them seeing us mess up sometimes. There's value in them seeing us, you know, for lack of a better word, fail at times, because it's truly how we recover. Right. Life is filled with, quote unquote, failures or mistakes or how I like to call it, poor choices, because oftentimes they're intentional. It didn't work out so well. And so we want our children to learn how to fail or make a poor choice, but then recover from that choice. Recovery is possible. It's when they see mom or dad just sit in the space of hopelessness. Like, it's not going to get better, or it's over for me. For an example, if a parent is terminated, right, from employment, right, then how does the parent respond to that? Okay, so they're struggling, they're hurt, it's grief, it's loss. And then do I see the parent or the caregiver, I should say, apply for another job at some point, right? So it teaches the child resilience. Bad things, crappy things will happen to good people, and how do I recover from that?
And resilience is really the only way it gets built through failure. I mean, you
right.
don't get resilience out of succeeding.
That's right.
All right, I can remember as a kid, you know, when somebody would die in the family, you know, mm-hmm. and I remember all the hushed conversations and a big house full of relatives and trying to process that, mm-hmm. you know, death and what it means to these people who are supposed to be the adults. I mean,
right.
you're describing, and I can just recall a long time ago, being that little kid, kind of wondering
yes.
how everything, and I don't think until this conversation I realized what I was doing.
Right.
Looking
yeah.
for some sort of what is this and how do I navigate this and what are they doing?
How yeah. do I make sense of what's going on with limited information?
Right.
Right, because the adults have more information. So with that information comes planning and processing and grief. Children have less information, because it's, you know, conceptualizing all that information is just a lot. But But children are smarter than what we give them credit for.
Do we protect them too much for their own good?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from lessons, from conversations.
Yeah.
Or I know people are worried about robbing people of their childhood. I think that's completely over-exaggerated by a lot of folks. I've always been, learn as much as you can about as much as you can and make decisions based on the information you have.
That's true.
That maybe we wait too long to let kids make mistakes and have honest conversations.
It's true. I think there's, you know, there's certainly adults or parents who they're thinking about, you know, I want to protect my children for as long as possible, and we get that. Though I will also challenge us that sometimes it's just uncomfortable for us to have the conversation.
We're using that for our own excuse.
So we really step back and say, okay, so how come I'm not having the conversation? And if all roads lead back to us, well, because I don't feel comfortable, and what am I going to say, and how do I start? And okay, those are all I.
Right.
So then maybe that's a good time to reach out for support and say, okay, how do I even approach this conversation with my child, whatever that hard topic is. But I do think we have to look inward for a bit, a second, and go, is this uncomfortable for me or for them? Because children are pretty inquisitive, meaning more times than not, they probably want to know in an age-appropriate way. We kind of have to stop ourselves and ask, who are we really protecting?
It seems even worse now because it's become politicized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not talking about helping. We're not talking about identifying. We're just talking about, oh, it's this or it's that.
Mm-hmm.
Life is so nuanced. There's very little in life that is this
or
that, in my experience. So how do you cut through that, you know, when you're dealing with parents and children? I mean, you know, that there's no agenda here other than to raise a healthy and normal child.
Yeah. I think you said that well. Oftentimes we operate in the extremes, the black and white, but there's a whole gray area. And really that subjectiveness is kind of where kiddos live and where we live sometimes. It's our perspective. I think it's a good opportunity to sit down and have just a direct conversation with a kiddo and or an adolescent or what have you and ask them what are their thoughts or perspectives about what's going on. I know we talked about this during COVID, but kids kind of trying to make sense of all these things happening around them. Why can't I be with my friend group? Fair question. Why can't I go to that birthday party? Why, you know, all of the whys. And that can certainly be overwhelming for an adult. But to sit down and to understand their whys, I think is to kind of allow them to say what their why is. But then from there, kind of try to dissect some of those whys. Well, yeah, I can see how it can be really hard for you to not be able to graduate with your class. Like, why wouldn't that be hard? Yeah, I had that experience. Why wouldn't you? Most people do. It's a rite of passage. I can see why that's difficult. Let me talk to you about why some things beyond ourselves. I kind of call that zooming in and zooming out. So we're really good at zooming in the sense that we see how things impact us in kind of our close circle. Zooming out is more of the challenge when we look at the kind of global impact or, you know, kind of that global thinking.
I would hope, you want your child to understand that bigger thinking and care about the bigger, you know, cause.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing sometimes in life there's sacrifice for the betterment of others. And those are all, to me, positive lessons that could have been during COVID and were used in all kinds of ways that maybe just turned it into negative. All right, so your elevator speech, I'm mom, I'm dad, I'm whatever. I got a 16-year-old and I was a 16-year-old. What is just 16-year-old behavior and what is something that maybe I should be worried about? I mean, how do you separate those two things?
Yeah, I think it's a good time to go back to when we were 16 years old, right? You know, we have that.
But they let us do ridiculous things. I mean, you know, I go to the, I think about the drugs are the things that concern me the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, chances are if a kid did some underage drinking, as long as there wasn't somebody driving drunk, you might wake up with a hangover, learn your lesson.
Mm-hmm.
People smoked marijuana. It wasn't the marijuana we have today.
Right.
And no one was worried about something called fentanyl or other things out there. Now I worry you could do a good job as a parent, have a pretty well-adjusted kid. They go out and make one bad decision.
Yeah.
They're not coming home.
Right. Yeah.
That's a danger we didn't have.
That's true. Yeah, there are so many additional factors. That's a really good point to bring up. Today, parents are working with a whole lot of additional kind of external threats. I mean, right? And so, absolutely, it's impacting them and their parenting and anxiety and things of that nature. But I think it's really important to go back in terms of normalizing 16-year-old behaviors and emotions, to go back to when we were 16 years old and empathizing with them is what I'm saying. In that they are in this whole phase, and they will be for a while, at least through early 20s, of the whole who am I phase. Like, who am I? And so to normalize 16-year-old behaviors is to probably know various 16-year-olds, because it's different. It's individualized.
Right.
And I think it's important to then get to know your individual 16-year-old. What's important to them? What's bothering them? What's impacting them? Thinking about some of the things we needed during certain ages of our lives, I think is important to go back and kind of try to give what we didn't get.
And relatable is great, but we didn't have social media. You know, we didn't have the stuff that stays up 24/7. Mm-hmm. You know, a bullying incident at school was over after that incident. You didn't take it home 24/7, you know, the way they do today. Although kids are kind of checking out of that. I'm proud of them. It's like they're finding their own solutions just not to be in that mess. But a lot of them still are. Mm-hmm. So just, don't be afraid to have a conversation. I mean, honest conversations.
Have a conversation, yeah. Kids learn from our actions and our inactions.
Modeling
is important. So it's what we do, and it's also what we don't do.
Yep.
So when we don't have the conversation, that says, oh, okay, avoidance is what we do in our home, so I don't have to go out and deal with certain things. So think about the first time their boss has a conversation with them. I want to talk to you about a behavior. Right? Maybe there's avoidance, maybe there's anger, maybe there's aggression, maybe whatever that is. But again, they're learning from us as their foundation. And so it's important to model those hard conversations. And then maybe take a collective deep breath afterwards and say, that was hard for me. Was that hard for you? Like, that was a challenge. And yet we got through it. We got through it because it's how we recover.
Charmaine, thank you.
Thanks so much, Brian.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.